as far as the book goes, will be in lesson 27. Let's look at, start off in 2 Chronicles, I think, is where we want to be, in the 15th chapter, I think, to a certain extent. I mean, Chris told me that essentially we were done with, we're getting finished with Asa anyway. If we look at the chart of the kings that we have in lesson 27, particularly starting on page 102, as I recall, yes, 102, we'll see that we're at which king in Judah right now? That's where we're studying about Asa. How far down the line is he? The third. So he's like the grandson of Rehoboam. And then Jeroboam, of course, continues along in Israel. So Rehoboam, the king of Judah, and Rehoboam, the king of Israel. Jeroboam went along for 22 years. Rehoboam only went for 17 years. And then his son, Abijah, only lasted for 3 years. So that only comes up to 20 years, which means that Jeroboam still had another 2 years to go before Rehoboam's grandson, Asa, took over and then reigned for quite a while. I found this interesting that if we look at this at this chart here and look at where Asa starts right up here at the top, right up here, he goes for his reign is for 41 years. Then we start counting the kings of Israel. And so we've got Rehoboam up here. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 down to Omri. And then 7 for Ahab. And in the fourth year of Ahab, then Jehoshaphat takes over. So, what did I say? 7? So, I just find it interesting that the king is set up in Judah, Asa. And he outlasts, as it were, 7 kings. Or reigns with, you might say, it contemporary with 7 kings in the northern kingdom of Israel. So, I just find that rather interesting that he had to put up with all those different people. But if we go and look then at Asa, generally speaking, how do we characterize at least the first part of his reign as king? As good or bad? He was a good king. Okay. But if we go to, let me pull up PC Study Bible real quick here. And so in 2 Chronicles 14, verse 2, it talks about that Asa did that which was good and right in the eyes of Jehovah his God, took away things and all that sort of stuff. And it says the kingdom in verse 5 was quiet before him. And in verse 6 just fortifies that, saying that the land was quiet. He had no war in those years. And then I think it's in 1 Kings that we go over where we find Asa in verse 9 of 1 Kings 15. It says that he reigned 41 years. His mother's name was Maacah, the daughter of Abishalom. Abishalom. And Asa did that which was right. And there was a place in here that said that there was a 10-year period, and I've lost it now. There was a 10-year period in which they had peace. Oh, there it is. It's in the first verse of 2 Chronicles 14. In his days, the land was quiet 10 years. Okay, so we see that as far as with Asa went, that he reigned for 10 years before there was any problems there. And then they go and just supplement that with the verses that are down here below that. So 10 years. And then we notice that he built fortified cities in Judah. Why would he build fortified cities?
Because if you're expecting to be invaded.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of bad people around, and there was even bad blood between them and their brethren up north for some reason. And I think when we were looking at the what's his name? Absalom. Rehoboam. I'll get it right here yet. And I think we talked about this 2 weeks ago, that Rehoboam and the people around him were upset and critical of Israel because they had turned away from God and set up idols and started worshiping other gods and things like that. And so at the beginning, it appears that Rehoboam and the people that were with him were righteously upset at the people of Israel. And that really started off their real animosity between one another. They really went against each other starting from then. And I think it just continued on because, as we see, even though the kings of Judah were good and bad, and so on, the kings of Israel were all bad. And I think for some reason, the folks in Judah thought that they were a bit more righteous than they and didn't want to put up with all of this idolatrous worship that the folks in Israel were doing. And of course, we realize that Jeroboam did what to solidify his reign in the northern kingdom? To make the religion that he set up more... Yes? Idols where?
In Dan and Bethel.
Dan and Bethel, right. So we had, and I think, as I recall, and I think we discussed this, he set up golden calves again. Where do we see that? First.
Egypt,
right. Or the people coming out of Egypt. So interesting to note that they did that. The reason that I think that the folks in the south didn't like the folks in the north is because they thought they were doing all sorts of idolatrous things, and we folks down here in the south, we're not doing idolatrous things, even though in actuality they were, because when we look at Asa, we see what's the first thing that he did? Yeah. So if the people down in Judah were all that righteous as far as they were concerned, why did Asa have to take away all the idols and tear down all the high places and such like as that? So here it's only, what is it, Rehoboam reigned for, how long was it on the, anybody have that chart open?
17 years.
17 years. And then his son, Abijah, reigned for 3 years. So there's 20 years worth of stuff there. And so within 20 years, these people were worshiping idols just essentially just like the people of the north were. But apparently, at least the people that were in power or the people that lived in Jerusalem were considering themselves to be a whole lot more righteous than the people in Israel who were doing silly things like worshiping idols. So, well, everybody's worshiping idols. So I'm not sure why they thought that they were better, but that did create a lot of enmity between them, and they just simply didn't get along. So when the Jehoshaphat, how did I get that Jehoshaphat? all right, so, whoops, want to be in 14. So... All right, so 10 years, Asa was fine as far as the peace in the kingdom went away. And then it says that it says in verse 7, they built and prospered. Okay, so Asa had an army and so on. And then here comes Zerah the Ethiopian with an army of 1 million. Now, interestingly enough, if you'll note back in the chart on page 102, it says over on the right-hand column about the foreign enemies, it says Zerah the Ethiopian, probably a commander of an Egyptian army. And I think they get that idea from back in chapter 12 or 13 where Shishak, the Egyptian, came up against them. And we see that there's a discussion about that his army was made up of people that included Ethiopians. And that's, I think, where these authors are getting the idea that the folks that when it talks about Zerah, the Ethiopian, that perhaps he's a commander of the Egyptian army. Because 1,000 miles means an awful long way for a million-man army to march, especially if he had 300 chariots. However, also, though, if we look in the text where it talks about the battle with Zerah the Ethiopian, We see that right here in verse 12 of 2 Chronicles 14, it says, Jehovah smote the Ethiopians. Now, as we go on through, we see, and when Chris said that he ended off with Asa, you know, giving his money to Ben-Hadad, or giving the money of Jerusalem, actually, to Ben-Hadad, to break his bond with Baasha, the king of Israel, because Baasha was building Ramah inside the borders of Judah, that... forgot completely what I was going to say. I shouldn't go down so many paths. What was I talking about?
When he gave money to Israel, was that your
step in the temple?
Yeah. So, yeah, he came down to build Ramah, and he gave the money away. So there was this battle between, or not battle, but there was this thing between them. They're both trying to sort of solidify their borders. And maybe this thought will come back to me at some time. If it happens at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'll give everybody a call and let them know. So what I was talking about here had to do with God. Oh, I know, that's Ben-Hadad, money, all that sort of stuff. Ben-Hadad, what does it appear that he and his army are? What we call today mercenaries, are they not? Generally speaking, countries that did not have their own standing army or that had small standing armies used mercenary armies to do their dirty work. And that's what Ben-Hadad was. And that may be what Zerah the Ethiopian was a mercenary that had an army and, you know, they were stationed in Egypt or something like that and the Egyptians used them. Of course, we're talking about, it says there on verse 9, an army of 1,000,000 and 300 chariots, and they came to Marashah. Now, if we look at the map, we see the Marashah is way down south in, what country are we talking about? Israel. So, it doesn't show it on here, but as I recall from looking it up on another map, Marashah is somewhere down in the neighborhood of Beersheba, or maybe a little bit further up north. But it's not anywhere up here in the hill country near Jerusalem or anywhere like that. They didn't get particularly far. And then when Asa goes out to battle them, of course, they sought God's counsel at that time, unlike at a later time, and they drove them off to, Gaza or Gath, somewhere. They drove them off to the west anyway, and apparently killed a lot of them, such that the Ethiopians felt that they did not have an effective army anymore. So they drove them away, and that all happened because the people prayed to God. We'll see also that when it talks about the fact that, and it might have said right here also that this is where it talks about the Lubim also, so the three, is it verse 8? Of which chapter?
Chapter
16. 1 Kings?
St. Chronicles.
Okay. Oh yeah, and this is where this is where Hanani the seer came to Asa to talk to him. This is in the area actually where Chris got to last week, and he's talking to Asa and he says, "We're not the Ethiopians and the Lubim, a huge host with chariots and horsemen, exceeding many. Yet because thou didst rely on Jehovah, he delivered them into thy hand." So if we go back and look at the fight with Shishak. And Rehoboam, we'll see also that the Lubim are mentioned there also. So and the Ethiopians. So when Egypt attacked Judah during Rehoboam's reign, we see that it mentions not only the Egyptians, but the Lubim and the Ethiopians. So it seems like they're all a big confederacy down there in the area of Egypt. And so when it says here that that they took the Ethiopians and the Lubim were a huge horse with chariots and horsemen exceeding many, we see that they had 300 chariots and a million men. How about the folks that came up from Egypt back in Shishak's time? How many chariots did they have? So I recall they had 12 or 1,500. So they were going great guns there with all of their chariots. So, but here, particularly in 2 Chronicles 16, he's talking about that which Asa had done. All right. Now, in verse 12, it talks about the Ethiopians, of course, being slain. The Ethiopians fled. It said, pursued them into Gerar. That's where it is. I didn't look that up on the map. And I don't know whether it's on the map in our particular area of the book or not. Don't see it. But so they went away, and it says, and the thing is that what appears to be important to a lot of the people at that time is that they carried away much booty. Now, in this terminology, what is booty? What are we talking about?
Spoils
of war, treasures, things like that. So apparently, that's one of the ways that many of the people in standing armies at that time got paid, was whatever they could strip off the slain soldiers or whatever they could take out of their camp. You remember when the later on when the the Assyrians came down against Jerusalem, and one morning 185,000 of them woke up dead, and the two lepers went into the camp. They're the ones that found it. They went in there and they started gathering all sorts of stuff, you know. And so it just reminds you of the movies where, you know, people have got all this stuff in their hands. They're trying to figure out, now how am I going to get out? It's sort of like the trick you do, I guess, with the monkey, and you put the banana in the jar and he goes in and grabs it, and then he won't let go of the banana in order to get his hand out of the jar. But this appears to be one of the ways, at least, that many of the armies were paid. So it was one of the incentives for people to go into battle, was to get treasures or the spoils of war because of the battles that they went through. So not only did they drive the Ethiopians down toward Gerar, but it says that they smote all the cities around Gerar also. And yes.
Gerar is southwest of Mereshah. There's the Gerar River, and it's a little closer to the coast.
So it's over toward.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's another river that's shown on my map. That looks like the Basor River.
Okay.
And there's one that runs a little higher. It must be smaller.
Uh-huh.
Just about right there where your cursor is.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So a little to the southwest.
All right. So Gerar is over in this area here somewhere, and Mereshah. And there's apparently a plain here because, you know, we've got the coastal plain here, and then we get into the hill country, sure. But the hill country really doesn't start until right about in this area here. You see where these two rivers are coming down at Beersheba. Beersheba is not in the hill country. It might be in the foothills, but it's not in the hills. and then that river then goes out to the sea. And so this is all a plain down here. So it talks about the fact that they had this battle at Mereshah, and it was in the plain of something. The valley of Zephatah at Mereshah. So some catchy names there. All right. Notice that they carried away, it says they smote all the tents of cattle, they carried away the sheep in abundance and the camels, and they returned to Jerusalem. So they all got all sorts of stuff. They got well paid for chasing out the Ethiopians. And now, I'm missing it here. Because we have here in chapter 15 about the Spirit of God coming upon Azariah, the son of Oded. And once again, we have a prophecy from God saying, if you'll do my will, I'll be with you. If you don't do my will, then I'll be against you. If you forsake him, it says he will forsake you. And he talks about the fact that their history is such that people were, it says, for a long season, Israel was without the true God, without a teaching priest, and without the law. But when they turned, he was found of them. So we need to remember that once again, they receive a warning like they have many times before, that you need to follow after God, and if you don't, it will be like these people. They were broken in pieces, nation against nation, and so on. He says, but be strong, and let not your hands be slack, for your work shall be rewarded. Much like he told Joshua when they were going into the promised land to begin with. He told them to be ye strong and fight for God. So, so once again, we see here that after these 10-ish years, I think right here it's going to talk about the fact that right here in verse 10, it talks about in the 15th year of the reign of Asa. So now we see here in the 8th verse, he took this prophecy, says he took courage, and now he put away all the abominations out of the land. So we realize that at the beginning of when King Asa took power, it says that he tore down all the idols and all the high places and such like as this. Apparently, either now, 10, 15 years later, he's got to do it again. Or what we were talking about at the beginning was that this was just a general discussion of what happened during the reign of King Asa, that he did this during his reign. So whether he did it on day one or did it 10 or 15 years later, here it says once again that he took down all the idols and such like as that. All right. And as we had discussed, I think, last week, about the fact that there were a lot of people from the northern tribes that defected, as it were, back down to Judah, because they felt that, as it says at the end of verse 9, when they saw that Jehovah, his God, was with him, that's what caused a lot of the people to come down. So it says the people out of Ephraim, Manasseh, out of Simeon, fell to him in abundance out of Israel. Now it says, so they gathered themselves together at Jerusalem in the third month in the 15th year of the reign. And they sacrificed unto Jehovah in that day of the spoil which they had brought, 700 oxen, 7,000 sheep. So that makes me feel right there, of the spoil which they had brought, that this actually happened in the 15th year of Asa, that they finally defeated the Ethiopians. So there's no indication here of how long this may have taken. And actually, many of the time spans that we look at here are difficult for us to understand, because as I'm going through my daily reading, I'm in the book of Deuteronomy, and all of a sudden it seems like the people of Israel are ready to spring across the river to the folks at Jericho. Well, it turns out they've been living on the other side of the river for quite a while already. It seems like, well, they go into the wilderness of Sinai and they just wander around in circles forever, and then they come up here to the other side of the river, and then they camp out for 7 days and attack. No, they've apparently been there on the other side of the river for perhaps years, living in the towns from the people, the towns of the kings who they overcame there on the other side of the river. So when you look at the thing, Moses does go down through their travels bit by bit, but there's no real discussion of how long they stayed at any particular place to a large extent. Some of the places, we stayed 3 days and then we moved on. You know, but there's nothing there that says, well, we stayed 15 years and then moved. But it appears to be that's the case in with some of these things. There is one in the book of Deuteronomy as it's talking about going up into the lands on the east side of the river that God says, it's time for you to come down from this mountain or some such. And so apparently they've been living there for at least some time. Anyway, but it wasn't the promised land. And none of those areas are as bountiful, you might say, as the areas that are on the west side of the river. All right. So they entered into the covenant, seek Jehovah their God, and with all their heart, and with all their soul, and so on. And as a matter of fact, they said, if you don't do that, we're going to put you to death. So that's another vow that they make. And whosoever, in verse 13, would not seek Jehovah, the God of Israel, should be put to death, whether small or greater, man or woman. All right. And so they're all happy about this. And, of course, that then just probably makes more serious their attitude of, well, we're better than those guys up in Israel, because that's all they do is worship idols. Now, notice that as is mentioned at the beginning of Asa's reign, that Asa's mom's name was Maacah. Apparently, she was made queen of the of Judah. And but notice that she made an abominable image for an Asherah, and says that Asa cut down her image, made dust of it, and burned it at the brook of Kidron. So that's kind of bad news for his mother. I guess he decided that he wouldn't kill her, even though it's obvious that this is in violation of the oath that they all just made a couple of verses before. I mean, all they had to do is read it like three verses up and they'd have seen that. So, all right. But once again, it reiterates that the high places were taken out of Israel. It says the high places were not taken out of Israel. Now, I think we discussed this a bit the other day. About the fact that he broke down all the high places. And I think Randy or maybe Joey mentioned something about, well, it says he broke them down, but it doesn't say they took them away. That maybe they just, it was kind of like over there in Gath with the Philistines when the ark was put in the temple of Dagon, I guess it was. And what happened the first day? The idol fell over. They said, oh, the idol fell over. They set him back up. You think, wait a minute. This is the idol. This is their God. He should set himself back up. But he didn't. So they went in. They set him back up. Well, then what happened the next day?
Fell over and his head fell off.
His head and his arms, too, I think. His hands or whatever. And so they go, well, okay. Well, we'll take this as a sign, perhaps. So... So Dagon, their god, couldn't help them. But the thing is that when he fell over, they set him back up. That didn't discourage them at all. As a matter of fact, it didn't discourage them at all, the fact that as is mentioned in, I forget which book it is it Ezekiel? Where it talks about that the man goes out and he cuts down a tree and then he cuts some of it up and uses it for firewood to keep himself warm. And then out of the same wood, he fashions himself a god and worships it and said, you're my God. You go, wow, how do we come to this conclusion? So the ways of idolatry are many and wonderful, as they say. Yes?
That's Isaiah 44.
Isaiah 44. Okay. Isaiah 44 talks about
verse 12.
All right, setting up the wood as an idol after you've made dinner out of it, with it, using it. All right, now, so I think what we can say is, where did 15 go? There it is. So in verse 10, it talks about all this occurred in the 15th year. In verse 10, and then as we go up here in chapter verse 19, it says, and there was no more war unto the 5 and 30th, or in our vernacular, 35th year of the reign of Asa. So we went from 15 to 35, which is, carry the 7 and drop the 9, that's 20 years, right? Did I get that right? I don't have my calculator. I don't know if I carried the 7 right. So, so 20 years between up here in verse 10 and here in verse 19, they didn't have any war. Everything was going fine. So, I want to look at verse 1. So what happened after that, though?
Made alliance with King Syria.
Well, he did that, but why did he do that? So let's look at our maps on page 101. Yes, 101. Let me expand this tetch. More than a tetch. All right. So, Israel, what king? Nope. Nope. Baasha. Right. We not having a phonetic language, English, have a tendency to
make up
push words together and make them like we would look them. But this Semitic languages are phonetic languages. And so you pronounce all the letters. So it's Baasha. And whereas we would say Basha or something like that, if we just look at it and say, well, that's what sheep say. They say Ba, and then it says Sha, so it's Basha. So, but in these languages, and so English is one of the few non-phonetic languages, generally speaking. Anywho, so Baasha comes down from Israel, which is up here and further on north. Boy, there's not a lot of color rendition there. Okay, but you can see that in your book on page 101. And so the line nominally between Israel and Judah is this one right here. And Baasha decides he's going to fortify Israel to keep... What is his purpose of fortifying Israel?
To keep all these people from defecting.
Keep the people from defecting. So we've seen that all these people have been defecting. And so now he's going to say, well, we're going to stop the people from defecting. So what are we going to do? We're going to go into Judah about 5 miles, and we're going to build a city there. And look at, how far is it from Jerusalem? If you look at the scale of your map, what'd you say? About 10 miles, right? The scale of the map seems to indicate about 10 miles. Of course, it's not 10 miles as it's 10 miles as the crow flies. Probably a bit more to get there because it's in the middle of the hills, or the mountains, whatever you want. We wouldn't call them mountains. We call them hills. But, so, Baasha decides that he's going to come down here and build the city of Ramah. It must be, I didn't look it up. Did anybody look it up? Is that a pass or something like that that's important, that would keep people from defecting? Why would he choose this point? I don't know. He chose to build this city of Ramah, and the reason that I say he chose to build it is because later on, when they take care of it, there ain't nothing left of it. So, he decides to do that. Well, he's well inside, as it were, the border of Judah, and he's decided to build this city. So, what should Asa have done? Yes, he should have called upon God for his help. Just like happened with the Ethiopians and earlier on with Rehoboam, happened with Shishak. Even though Rehoboam at that time was still a bad king, they, it says, humbled themselves and asked for God's help. And God said, okay, with Shishak, since they're humbling themselves, I won't remove the Egyptians, but I won't let them take Jerusalem. But they took all of their money. Jenny?
It looks like Rehoboam.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that makes sense, I guess. So, there'd be sort of a well-worn pathway, as it were, and the way the people would go. Otherwise, they have to, get their machetes out, cut through the jungle. So, all right. So, it looks like Ramah might be on right on the way of Shur, the trade route. And so that's a good place. So most likely then Bethel is also on the trade route or somewhere there close by. All right. So Baasha is going to do this. Now everything's been calm here until the 35th year of Asa. It says no more war until the 35th year of Asa. It says at the end of chapter 15. But now in the 36th year of Asa, now Baasha goes up, it says, goes up against Judah. And he doesn't want anybody to come out, to go out or come in to Asa, king of Judah.
Kind of like
East Germany? Yeah, kind of like that. Right. This is sort of the Brandenburg Gate. Yeah. Right. So, yeah, this is the Berlin Wall of the Berlin Wall of Israel. Yeah, so no one's supposed to go in either direction. I don't know what that's going to do to the trade routes, but anyway. So Asa should have, as is mentioned later on, gone to God to ask about this, but he doesn't. Instead, he essentially loots the temple and does what with it? Yeah, gives it to Ben-Hadad. And of course, Hadad's his name because Ben-Hadad simply means son of Hadad. So so maybe his name is Ben. But anyway, I don't know what they probably called him, Ben-Hadad. Most of them probably called him Sir. So he took all of this stuff and he sent it to Ben-Hadad in Damascus. So rather than doing what they did only, well, a few years before, 20 years before, and call upon God to help them. And as a matter of fact, you'll remember that when Jeroboam rebelled, what did Rehoboam want to do? He wanted to go attack the folks up north, right? Because they were they're being bad people. And what did God tell them?
No, don't do it. Someone knock on the back door and tell them they got 5 minutes in the little kid's room.
So there's been a lot of previous examples of where people asked the people in power asked God to help them during some battle. And God helped them. Here, he didn't even bother. And it's interesting to notice, we continue on down, that it seems like after the 36th year, Asa didn't bother at all with God, period. So all of that went to the king of Syria. And of course, this guy was just a mercenary. He would just, you know, he worked for the person that paid him most. Yes?
That seems to be an ongoing lesson through the scriptures, is when times are good, it's easy to forget about God.
Right.
We need to take that to heart and realize we've got it really good.
That's right, exactly. When times are good, things, people seem to drift away from God, and we've had it good, as you say, for quite a long time. And that's
according to world standards, we're wealthy.
Oh yeah, by far, yes, yes. So yeah, that's something that, and so the attitude that they have here is one obviously that teaches us. I mean, these scriptures were given for our admonition, were they not? So a good point there that when things are easy, then it's easier for us to forget, and too many times we do. All right, Ben-Hadad hearkened unto King Asa, and they went against the cities. Now, as a matter of fact, if you look once again back at your map, you see that not only did Ben-Hadad withdraw his alliance with Baasha, apparently they were allied before, probably because they were just closer to one another, but it says that Ben-Hadad also went against Ijon and Dan and another Abel city, but it's not listed on here. So he actually went against several cities up here at the north end of Israel, and Baasha, who was apparently down in Ramah, helping to build this thing with his own hands, hears all about this and leaves off building. And everybody rushes back home. And the folks in Judah say, great, well, that worked out well. And in verse 5, it says that when Baasha heard of it, he left off building Ramah and let his work cease. And then Asa, what did he do? And his folks. Yeah, they what?
They pilfered to reinforce their two cities that were right by.
Yeah, so they actually destroyed Ramah right here. They carried away the stones of Ramah and the timbers thereof, wherewith Baasha had built it, and he built therewith Geba and Mizpah. Oops, down too far south. North. Where are we? Bet-Shan. Shechem. There we go. Alright, so he destroyed Ramah and he built Mizpah and Geba or Geba. So both of those are probably on the sides of the way of Shur also. And perhaps they're in some area where they can look down upon the route or some such thing as that. Anyway, so Ramah was just completely destroyed, and Geba and Mizpah were built with the remnants of Ramah. So I guess Asa is saying, well, that'll show him. And so now we've got that taken care of. And then now Hanani comes and talks to Asa, says, you shouldn't have done that. So and that's in verse 7. And he goes down and talks about the Ethiopians and the Lubim, a huge host, and how God helped them to get rid of them. And so Asa, of course, says, well, thank you, Hanani. That was nice of you to say that. What does he do with Hanani? Throws him in prison. And we've seen that happen a couple times with prophets, have we not? Someone ring the bell. Let the class in the back know we're done. So we've seen that happen a couple of times where when the king didn't like what the prophet had to say, he just tossed him in the pit, tossed him in prison, things like that. It seems like a semi-common thing to do. So the job of prophet, or in this instance seer, might be a semi-hazardous job too. So hopefully he got combat pay. So, all right. So we're essentially at the same place where Chris left last week, I think. And I think Mickey will probably be back at doing this on Wednesday.